All right, powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, it is Season 5. This is Episode 53, I believe, of the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series, CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask. And look at this, to the bullpen we go. We've got Jeff O'Neill from TSN, from Overdrive, from Toronto Maple Leafs, a regional coverage on TSN. Last-minute stuff, oh. And not that you're not a valued guest. Of course you are. Of course you are. But I'm going to just lay out the truth here for you, all right? So normally, Ray Ferraro is pretty good at traveling all his gear. So Ray is on the road.
What do you mean? Is technical gear?
Yeah, like the laptop, and there's a special microphone, and you know it. I mean, you've got it at home in your home studio. So he and Cammy and the family, I believe, are actually in Chicago spending some time with the brother-in-law, Tony Granato, and their family. So, hey, it's a family few days, nothing wrong with that. But normally Ray is like, you know what? I'll just throw the microphone, the laptop, we'll be good to go. So Ryan Rashog sends out the weekly reminder. Hey, what are we thinking? Tuesday, Thursday, as per usual, 9:30 Eastern record time. Ray goes, yeah, I'm in Wisconsin and I don't have any of my stuff. So it's like, well, we can either disappoint the sponsors or we can go to our good friend O-Dog.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I first started at TSN. I was doing a bunch of different things like NHL Network, That's Hockey. And I would show up some days and I wasn't it was my first real job, right? And I wasn't exactly a daily planner. And I would show up and Dan Salem, who used to run That's Hockey, would come up for this little meeting before I started radio. And I'd look at him and say, bud, I hate to tell you this, but I don't have a suit today, so I'm not doing That's Hockey. And he'd be, the look on his face, that guy hated my guts for about 6 months.
And all he had to do was walk down the hall to Studio 6 and see that, in fact, you've got a collection of like 20, or this was pre.
But that was pre-dressing room. That was pre. I'm glad I kind of didn't have that because it got me off of it.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're going to get into headlines here momentarily, Ol, but when you get to this point of the regular season, and there's not a whole lot going on here. Yeah, we've got some races, which we'll talk about in headlines coming up. But, you know, essentially you're in the, what, 10 to 13 games remaining regular season sort of drift. As a fan, as a guy who covers the game, are you just looking at the finish line and going, okay, let's get the regular season done. Let's get into the playoffs. And what's the mindset of the player other than those guys who feel like they're still in a fight?
Well, it's different for each team and each individual, Dregs, because there's different things at stake. The one thing you can never do is, man, I hope we get this matchup or this matchup. You just have to try to get to your best. It's almost like a finishing type of preseason where you want everybody healthy at the start of the playoffs. You want your goaltender feeling good. You want systems dialed in. And as an individual, the one thing you want to do is just have your game in order and you want to be healthy. Health is the biggest question. We've seen so many times year after year, Dregs, where, you know, guys are going down in the playoffs. And to start the playoffs, and there's so many tough matchups, it's almost like the first round every year is one of the more exciting ones because there's so many quality matchups in the division, teams that hate each other. You got to be healthy and dialed in, have your goaltender ready. So as a player, you're just like, get me to the finish line here. Let me get my reps in. Let's get the special teams going. I want to feel good about my game. And most importantly, though, is feeling healthy.
All right, time for headlines brought to you by Tim Hortons. The iconic roll up to win is back with big prizes. Now until the end of March, so some time left here. Earn one roll for each eligible purchase. Just be sure to scan for the Tim's rewards before paying or use scan and pay. Every roll revealed earns an entry for a chance to win a Tim's financial $10,000 daily jackpot prize. So for the list of prizes, all the details, more contest info, visit rolluptowin.ca. So on the vein of heading into the postseason, let's take a closer look at the Eastern Conference here. And your thoughts on whether the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to lose their hold on third place in the Atlantic. Now, I'll remind you of the games remaining here between, with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So Toronto has the New Jersey Devils three times, Florida twice, Tampa Bay twice, Washington, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Montreal, and Detroit to close out its regular season. Tampa Bay has the Leafs twice, as mentioned, Boston, the Islanders, Detroit, Montreal, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Ottawa, Washington, and Buffalo. So do you think Toronto's a lock in that three hole right now?
I do, Drags, and the reason is, if this was maybe 3 months ago where the Toronto Maple Leafs would kind of lower their play against lower competition, I would be like, God, you just can't really count. You can never count them as victories. But in the last week or so, and it kind of happened after, you know, that game in Philly where they stunk the joint out and their coach scratched Brody the next night, it seems like they have this different approach. Although it is short-term, Dregs, I do not want to get carried away with this, but it's like an understanding of we have to start with work and intensity, and then skills and goals will happen after that. And I don't know how long this is going to last. And like I just mentioned, I don't want to jump the gun on this, but it just seems like there's a bit of a different vibe. They are going to get Mitch Marner back, hopefully within the next 10 days. That's a hope, because I want him to be healthy, and I'm sure he does himself. But it just seems like a bit of a different vibe. You're seeing the impact of Edmondson on the back end, and I don't want to go nuts on that either, Darren, because it's very short term and it's not Bobby Orr back there. But I've been asking and wanting for a long time for some physicality back there, where there's just a price to pay if you want to go to the front of the net. So I think I'm quite comfortable with the Leafs right now, where they're at, because it just seems like a bit of a meaner, more intense approach. But the one X factor in what you just mentioned is the goaltender down in Tampa, because he's quite capable. It's kind of been up and down for him when he's come back from injury. He hasn't really been that dominant guy where every night he's stymieing people. But if that guy gets on a heater and Kucherov and company keep filling the net, who the hell knows what Tampa Bay is capable of, because they have that championship.
Yeah, program. I hear you. And look, I want to just revisit Edmondson for just a moment. And look, it's a small sample size, other than when you look at the body of the work here. This guy isn't new to the National
League. And I will say one thing, Dregs. The last two games he's played, that's kind of the best of Joel Edmondson. Like, he might slip and have some off nights, but if he can bring that 85% of the time, that's what you're looking for.
I mean, that game Saturday against the Oilers, I thought he was a horse. Like, you know, two hands on the stick in the defensive zone, you know, making the simple plays off the boards, off the glass, all of that. You get an appreciation. You know, we all look at the fancy plays of Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes, the offensive defenseman, but there is something to be said for the meat and potatoes guys that know their role and stay within that framework.
I've always said it, Darren, about a defensive core. You've got your puck movers, distributors, and you look at the Maple Leafs blue line. That's probably Brody when he's playing well, and definitely Morgan Rielly. And you can't have depth guys, role players back there as skill guys. You will get walked all over in your own zone. And for years, it's been 6 foot skill guys back there and offensive players. I used to love smallish type defensemen. I'm only 6 feet tall myself. But when you went into Dallas and there was Darian Hatcher and Matt Tkachuk and Ludwig, it was just like, it was a horror show. So, you know, you get big guys back there that are physical. It really makes skill players think twice about what they want to do in the offense.
All right, let's talk about a former Toronto Maple Leaf. And we'll talk about Sam Reinhardt as well. I mean, both added to the 50-goal club very recently. Zach Hyman scored his 50th in Ottawa on Sunday in that 5-3 loss, almost said win, loss to the Ottawa Senators. Not a great trip for the Oil through Ontario. I want you to listen to Hyman's response post-game when asked if he's at all surprised to hit the 50-goal milestone.
My career's kind of always been, you know, let's just achieve what's ahead of us, right? When I was in university, I had 2 goals my first year. I was drafted, and nobody thought I was going to be, you know, I was just a draft pick. I was no longer a prospect, and everybody kind of wrote me off. And then I started to score again, and then all of a sudden, you know, I was an NHL player, but I was an NHL player who had no hands and was a grinder playing next to, you know, Austin and Willie, and that was kind of the narrative. And then I scored 10 goals, and then 15, and then 20, and then, oh, he's an okay player. He just plays with good players. And then I still have that narrative, which is great, you know, and it's awesome. Like, I think it just shows, like, you just hit little milestones along the way, and you just block out outside noise and you work really hard and you have a positive attitude and good things happen.
I mean, he's such an honest, genuine guy, right? And how do you argue with anything he just said there? Because that's been the basis of his career, is the expectation that at some point, his game's going to falter. You know, his body's going to wear down. You know, you look at the goals that he scores, they're all essentially net front. But that's not the easiest spot in the offensive zone to win battles and play the game that he plays. Is he finally deserving of the credit of being a top goal scorer in a real difficult National Hockey League?
Darren, I totally think he deserves all the credit in the world. A guy that's self-made like that and continues to work and put the work in, and it seems like every year he's just not satisfied. He could have easily said, I'm going to get the chance this year to play with Draisaitl or McDavid, and if I rip home 30, that's a good season. And he could just rest on that and be satisfied. But everybody says, and there is a McDavid factor, when you're playing with the greatest player in the world, you're going to get opportunities that you just don't get.
Yeah.
But not everybody's playing with McDavid. Guys get the opportunity. Excuse me. You saw at the beginning of the year, different line mates for McDavid, and it didn't work out, so they go play somewhere else. To play with elite players like that, you have to have a mindset that you are great and you have to perform every night. I played with two Hall of Fame centermen in Matt Sundin and Ron Francis, and those guys have big expectations on their shoulders, and they have to perform. They've got the most skin in the game out of everybody. They have to answer questions if the team's not performing. So to saddle up with those guys, you've got to be ready to play, and you have to produce and perform. So I always say, you know, you can play with great players, and you talk about net front and banging in empty net goals just like you still got to put it in. I've seen a bunch of guys that immense skill, and they didn't have the knack for scoring goals. To be self-made like that and put that on yourself to be better each and every year and kind of shove it up everyone's you know what, I think it's a tremendous accomplishment for Zach Hyman, and he deserves all the props in the world.
It's having the gonads to go to those spots, right, and the hockey IQ to put it all together. I mean, you're not playing with Mats or Ronnie Francis for very long if you don't have the combination of those two things, right? They put the puck in an area where you can get it and fire it home, and you miss or it just doesn't pan out, you're probably not there, right? I mean, that's just the reality.
Yeah. Ronnie Francis was the first centerman I ever played with who told me to shut my mouth in the slot. He's like, I know I can see you, just please be quiet. And when I give you the puck, your job is to put it in the net. But you talk about Hyman's gritty goals, lots of tip-ins, lots of plays in front of the net where he's banging it in. He's also had a lot of awesome goals, breakaways. Yeah. Like, he's shown that his hands in tight have been tremendous this year. Wrist shots coming down the wing. Like, he scored some unbelievable goals, some backhand shelfs. To score that many goals in a season, and Drags, this guy might get 60. He's got time left, and it seems like he's ripping home two every night. The guy might get 60 goals this year. It's just an incredible story, an incredible
Not
season.
Quite the same fanfare for Sam Reinhart. I mean, it's because it's the two Canadian markets, you know, Hyman in Edmonton, formerly in Toronto. Reinhart also scored his 50th on Sunday, and that went over the Philadelphia Flyers. He said post-game, Jeff, that's obviously a number I've never really thought about. That was his quote post-game. So now he has three 30-plus goal seasons, all in Florida, by the way, and eight seasons of 20 or more in the combination of Buffalo and Florida. I'm not sure why he's surprised that he's hit this milestone. I mean, 50 is a big number. It's hard to do. It's an elite group historically. But Reinhart has that offensive flair. So what do you think? I mean, are you at all surprised he got there?
I'm kind of surprised because, like you said, Dregs, he's not exactly like fleet of foot, and he was always a crafty guy around the net. But to elevate, just like Hyman, as we just discussed, it's just like, and it's the one thing that's fascinating about it, Darren, is the timing of it. His contract's up at the end of the year, and to hit 50 at this particular time in his career is outrageous as far as contracts go. And that's going to be a fascinating story to watch because he's got a great setup down there in Florida. Yeah. They got a great team. Everyone knows the tax situation down in Florida. And it's like, does he even want to try to hit the jackpot and go somewhere else. I think he's got to look at the Florida Panthers and say, how do we make this work? I don't want to be outrageous. I don't want, but the other thing is, like, it's your time to shine as far as the contract. So how are you going to make that work? And would another team be saying, well, that's his plateau year or his big time year. What's he going to be after that? So you're talking about locking a guy in for 8 years. What are you going to get after that? So it's going to be crazy to watch that. But if I'm him, I'm like, I got a great team. I play with great players in Florida. I got to figure out a way to make this work. But I did the same thing, Dregs. I went from 17 to 19 to 21 to 25, 30 a couple times. And then I got to 40. And it's almost like you just don't even think about it on the way. You're just like, I just got to keep ripping these home, because if I think about it too much and you start, I started thinking about 50 after 40, and I'm like, man, I could be a 50 goal scorer. And I wet the bed on the way home, and I only got one goal in the last seven games. I ended up with 41. But all the way leading up until then, I didn't think about anything. You just go with the flow and rip them home. As soon as you start thinking about it, you might get interrupted.
Was 41 a contract year for you, or you were in a contract then?
It's one of the things I have regrets about, Darren. That would have been a six-year deal back in the day, and that would have been a monster.
Well, whatever Sam Reinhart gets, it's going to be lucrative. And I agree with your assessment. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a fairness from both sides here because of the fit and because of how things have gone for Reinhart. But Billy Zito and the Florida Panthers are no dummies. They know that, okay, you got to get at least close to market value. And market value in Florida is probably lower. Well, it would be lower than it is in Toronto or New York or, you know, anywhere where the tax situation is higher.
Well, Darren, the interesting thing about the negotiation is going to be, I'm sure his agent is going to use William Nylander's contract as a comparable.
Yeah.
But the Florida Panthers are going to pull the old Lidstrom type thing, saying Matthew Tkachuk is the bar right now at 9.5. And we don't really want you making more than that. So that's going to be where the give and take happens. It's like, what number do you settle at for a high scoring winger? Toronto decided to go to 11.5 for William Nylander. And now Florida, what's your play?
Okay, let's rank the top five in each conference, you know, with a dozen or so games left. I agree or disagree. In this order in the East, I've got Florida, number one, Rangers, two, Carolina, three, Boston, four, and Toronto, five. What's your lineup?
Dregs, the only thing I have different on my list is I've got the Carolina Hurricanes, who since that Gensel trade and getting Kuznetsov, they're on a heater right now, and Freddie Anderson has kind of helped that Kachetkov and net and really stabilize things back there. And Freddie is going to – I think every team's got, like, a couple X factors, and Freddie Anderson in the playoffs could be a massive X factor. We know his history in the past. It doesn't really seem to go well, or he gets injured. But I think the Carolina Hurricanes, and Roddy Brind'Amour has done a hell of a job this year, because of all the teams that weren't getting saves, Dregs, Carolina was one of them, and they held it together, and now they're flying. But I've got the Rangers third. Boston is kind of stumbling a little bit, some goaltending issues right now. I don't know who's going to be their guy in Boston. And I've got Toronto at five. But I think the Florida Panthers, if they get cooking, they can be real dangerous. They went to the Cup Final last year. I think they got a taste, and I think they want more, and they could go the distance if Bob returns to form come playoff time again.
I mean, what's his save percentage? It's over 900. I mean, there was a time not long ago before Florida turned things around, so prior to last season, where I'm sure Zito was laying awake at night, sleepless, trying to figure out how to get the hell out of that contract. Bobrovsky.
At $10 million a year.
And now, you know, he's the rare example. Vasilevsky would be another. Connor Hellebuck would be another, where you don't have a problem investing the big dollars because the rate of return and the goaltending is terrific.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when you see it, for whatever reason, I mean, he was so good in Columbus. He won a couple of Vezinas, and there's a transition for these guys when they change teams for whatever reason. I don't know what it would be. You just look at it as a fan of the game and say, why aren't you the same guy you were in Columbus? But he's gotten over that adjustment period, and it's good patience on the Panthers because they could have easily said, we gotta find a way to get the hell away from this contract. I don't know how or why or what we're going to do with it, but we got to move on from it. They stuck with him. He's got it together, and now they got a fantastic team, and I think they're ready to win.
They'll be challenged by some pretty good teams in the Western Conference, no doubt about that. So yes. When I look at the West, I've got this feeling about Colorado, and it's not just because of McKinnon and Rantanen and Cale Makar. I think that the Colorado Avalanche management did some real crafty work in bringing in the pieces that they brought in and around the trade deadline. So I look at Colorado as one, Dallas as number two, the Edmonton Oilers three, for obvious reasons. Not disrespecting Vancouver. I've got Edmonton, Vancouver neck and neck, but I've got Vancouver four, and then Winnipeg, and then in parentheses, I put the Vegas Golden Knights. It just feels weird not to have Vegas in the top five, but I've got them on the outside. I've got them six. How about you?
They are playing with fire, Dregs, the Vegas Golden Knights. It's like they're one of those teams. And if you remember back in the day when LA won their second cup, it was like their grinding approach and their grinding style. It barely got them into the playoffs. But as soon as they get in, watch out. And I'm sure that's what Vegas is hoping for right now. They need some saves, and they need to get healthy, and they need to get guys back in their lineup ASAP to get in. But if they get in and they get hot, they've got the nucleus there to do some real damage. Dallas is a really interesting story because if we talk about X factors, theirs is Ottinger. You remember the way he played a few years ago against the Calgary Flames in the playoffs? He was outrageous, man. He was so good. And if he can return to form like that and by committee up front because they don't have that megastar, like if guys like Robertson and Sagan and Ben and Johnston, the young kid, they can all perform. And they got that Stankoven. I don't know if he can be a difference maker in the playoffs, but if they can do that by committee where every night some of those guys are contributing, Dallas could be a serious factor in the playoffs. The Edmonton Oilers, I've always said for the last few years, and McDavid and company said it before the season, it's cup or bust. When you've got two guys like Dreisaitl and McDavid playing at the level they are, sooner or later it's got to translate into a Stanley Cup. Watching them last year, I don't know, they couldn't get a save, but they were scoring every night. I love what they're doing. Demko is another guy in Vancouver where if he can put it together, they're going to be a tough out. I think things have totally changed in Van. And the same thing with Winnipeg. If Hellebuyck's on a roll and by committee up front for those guys, they're big and strong. And if they can go on a 2 or 3-1 fest score-wise, they could be dangerous too. All good teams.
Let's just revisit Edmonton for a moment here. And I'm thinking of the game on Saturday against the Maple Leafs, and they had a crappy start. Toronto just bowled through them, you know, and then kind of gathered themselves and pushed back late in that hockey game. But Leon Draisaitl is as ornery as they come, right? On and off the ice. You get that brash honesty from Leon Draisaitl, which isn't always great for the local media, but that's fine. We saw an exchange on the bench, which isn't unusual, right? I mean, how many conversations? You told a conversation or told a story earlier about Ronnie Francis telling you, hey, keep your mouth shut, get to the slot, I'll get you the puck, shoot it in the net, right? Well, that probably happened on the bench or in the dressing room. But so I don't want to make too much out of the exchange between Evander Kane and Leon Draisaitl. But it's not like they were, hey, nice job, nice play on it. You know, that I need more of that. That was terrific. I mean, Leon was given Evander Kane the business based on something that didn't happen or went the way it shouldn't have gone in the previous play.
I was very methodical on who I yelled at on the bench, and it sure as hell wasn't our best player. I could give it to a sixth or seventh defenseman, but I think people have to understand, and it's hard to explain if you haven't been in the situation. This isn't like cubicle stuff where it's like, hey, can I borrow your stapler? There's high emotions, that's physical, and you're charged up, and sometimes you got to look at somebody and say, hey, wake the F up. Like, this is if somebody's not ready to go or somebody's underperforming and not making standard plays, I got no problem with somebody like a Draisaitl or a Kane saying it to somebody because I don't know what's going on with Kane in Edmonton right now, but he's been a damn good performer for them. Like come playoff time, if he gets it together, he is going to be a key guy. Other than McDavid and Draisaitl, he's always on the board. I have absolutely zero issue with a couple guys just having a heated exchange where it's all the motivation behind it is I want you to be better and something similar to that. It's not that you hate them or you hate the player or the person. It's just they want it to be better. And that's the motivation.
I think that's an important perspective because, again, optically, we're sitting on our couch and we're watching Hockey Night in Canada and we see something like that. I mean, everybody jumps to conclusions. So
it's low-hanging fruit, Darren, because it's Evander Kane and people are saying, oh, maybe Evander Kane's acting up again. I'm not privy to that information. That just seemed like the intensity of a battle, and it was like, just be better here.
Speaking of ornery, last week John Tortorella scratched his captain, Sean Couturier. Didn't want to talk about it. Absolutely dismissed the media day of. Didn't want anything to do with discussing it. This week, he's asked about his goaltending and goaltender Felix Sandstrom. You saw the video clip, right? Silence. He's staring at the media for, I'll call it several seconds. Maybe it wasn't that long. And then just turns and bolts. Now, are you in the camp that this is, because we talk about Torts too much, in fairness, too much on the podcast. But are you in the camp of this is Torts being Torts or a problem that the Philadelphia Flyers just don't need?
I think it's a combination of both, Darren, because it just seems like, and the one thing I have for Torts is respect, because he's doing it his way. And if he ends up getting canned sometimes next year, like he did it his way and he's going to go out his way. But I just think it gets to a certain point where it's like, it's too much about Torts. And I think the media, for the most part, they're basically topical. Like if your goalie plays like that, you want to hear what the coach's thoughts are. You can't put together some thoughts and just say it was a struggle for him back there and he needs to respond quickly down the stretch here because we're trying to get into the playoffs and keep it as simple as that. But just to look at somebody like they're a moron and put your arm with the cast in it up in the air and act like the person is stupid. And I do understand being a former player that you can be frustrated after a game. And I fielded some garbage questions where you have to answer them. I also told people to their face they were morons for asking that question. Because I can remember one time after an 8-1 loss, there was this young kid from NC State who came up to me with this little pigeon microphone, and he goes, how did that feel? And I just looked at him, and I said, how do you think it felt? It was 8-1. We got our asses kicked. Like, what do you think it felt like? I don't know why. Now I'm starting to sound like I was Torts back in the day. Let's get back on topic here. Just have some kind of answer for people. You scratch the captain, talk about your discussions with him. You said he was upset. Just talk about it a little bit. I think it's a dangerous line. And I disagree with the captain scratch. I think you can light him up in front of his teammates, Dregs, and then you start him at center ice against Austin Matthews. But let's be honest, Sean Couturier has got one goal in a lot of games, 27 or 28. And he's got to be better. But I think as a coach, and Ken Hitchcock talked about it a lot, where it's like you're using your captains and your leaders to relay the message. So you're not barking daily and yelling at guys and saying you got to do this. You're using the leadership. And what do you do with a guy that's now your captain? It's a difficult position to be a leader when you're being scratched from games. You want to pull aside a young guy when you're being scratched yourself and tell him to work harder? A young guy would look and say, you're not even in the lineup, man. What the hell are you talking about? So it's Torts being Torts, but the one thing I do respect about it, he does it his way and he's going
to
go.
And does it ever happen where a coach comes to you, say in the second intermission, and literally gets in your face and says, you've got 20 minutes to show that you're invested or you're in the press box next game? Plain and simple. I can't make it any easier for you than that. You've got 20 minutes to play for your job next game. Does that happen?
Greg, I've had it all, buddy. I've been called out in front of the team. I've been pulled back into the coach's room between intermissions. It's just whatever. But I was a big boy. I could take that kind of stuff, and it motivated me because it made me hate the coach's guts so much. I just wanted to play better and shut him up and get him off my case. So I've experienced all of it, and it's up to the coach. The coach's responsibility is managing people and motivating people. And you got to figure out what each individual needs because not everybody's the same.
All right, those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons.
Ready to roll? All right, let's roll.
Whoa, I'm rolling in it.
Play the 60th anniversary edition of Roll Up to Win on the Tim's app today.
Our interviews and Ryan Dregs are brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey, who have released the Canadian Club Invitation Series, CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, all the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club with the added richness and sweetness of Sherry. So time for Ask Ray, or in this case, Ask O and Dregs Anything. You can send us your questions on X and Instagram at Ray and Dregs, or on the website, rayanddregs.com. A couple of fun ones, and then a bit of a challenging one for you. So where do you want to start? You want to start with the fun ones or the more challenging hockey-related question?
Let's get the challenging.
Yeah, it's not really challenging. It comes from Instagram. Lonnie Lynn 10. What are your thoughts, Jeff, on 10 minutes of 3-on-3 overtime? So the BC Hockey League this year implemented it, 10-minute 3-on-3 overtime. The whole strategy has changed, according to Lonnie Lynn 10, particularly with the use of players. I mean, coaches can't ride your top six forwards or maybe your three defense for 10 minutes. And the strategy has actually changed. Would you be in favor of that? I know the East Coast League tested 7-minute 3-on-3 overtime. And last week, GM meetings in Florida, the NHL said they paid attention to it. They don't like it. Would 10 minutes be better because of what Lonnie has said here?
Absolutely not. I think it's too much. It's too much wear and tear on the best players. There's too much hockey going on to begin with. There's 82 games. It's a grueling schedule. I don't know why they don't try an exhibition season, some type of over and back rule, where if you're going to leave the zone, you can't go past the red line. You've got to find a way to regroup. I think there'll be more turnovers, more fast breaks, regroups, odd man opportunities, because the regrouping into your own zone 3-on-3, it's sucking the life out of overtime. And the owners say 70% of the games or whatever their percentage is. But I don't know why they just don't try that in preseason. Just can't go past the red line. You got to do a quick regroup. There'll be all kinds of turnovers. But 10 minutes, I think, is nuts. There's too much hockey to be going on already. And I think this adds more wear and tear.
Yeah, so the NHL players. Says that, you know, if you had to police the regroup and you cross center and they had to stop by blowing the whistle, there'd be too many stoppages. I don't think that'd be the case. I think the players would get it automatically because they don't want the
stoppages. They adapt pretty quickly, man. They adapt pretty quickly.
I agree. All right, good stuff. From Will, what is the most number of sticks, Jeff, you have broken in a game?
Oh, you go through some streaks where it's like, I always had 4 new ones for every game, which seems ridiculous, but you got to have them ready, man, because if something stupid happens and somebody, and I played in an era that is a little different than now, where people were tomahawk chopping in front of the net, and those things would break in half like nothing. So it would be nothing. I think the most would be 3 sticks in one game. And there would be a couple self-inflicted wounds if you're pissed off because the first 2 sticks break. You break it the 3rd one on your own. So I'm going 3.
So I think I've told you this story. And maybe you had the 2-piece stick. Like when it's when sticks first shifted from, all right, a wooden hockey stick to the 2-piece. And then, of course, you've got the 1-piece and they've evolved that, you know, to the specifics of whatever the player wants. And I remember Curtis Joseph asking him about which player, I'm going to use the word, scared him the most. And he said Jeff O'Neill. Now, he didn't disrespect you. And it was after the stick changed. Maybe it was to the 1-piece. You'd probably remember this. But he said, you know, Jeff had a great shot before the stick change. But he said after, it was like the puck. Because, I mean, a goaltender would watch the release, obviously. And he could see how quickly the puck was going from A to B and B being a net, right? And in your case, he said it was like a slingshot. It just went bang, and you went from being, you know, a guy you had to pay close attention to as a shooter to a guy who he just couldn't get a hold of the puck. Does that make any sense to you?
Dregs, there's one man to thank for that, and his name is Andreas Dackel.
Okay. Andy Dackel, yeah.
I was down in the dumps, a slow start, and I was just in a bad place mentally. I'm like, you just when you're in a place like that, you're just like, I don't know where this goes. Like, I was playing poorly. I was not producing. And we were in Ottawa. And Dackel had basically adapted the Sakic version of the One Piece. And I asked the trainer for the Sens, the locker room attendant. I said, can you just go grab me a couple of those things? I want to try them. He grabbed me a couple. The next night in New Jersey, I ripped a couple by Marty Brodeur. And I never stopped scoring for three years. So Dackel got me out of a massive slump and a massive dark spot in my career. And it was just such a difference because I was never really, like I was in junior, Darren, I was a playmaking center. I was never regarded as that shooter. And playing with Nelson Emerson and Brendan Shanahan, they kind of taught me how to shoot the puck in the quick release. But as soon as I got that One Piece, man, it was a different beast. And it changed my career. Totally changed my
career. So you're a thoughtful
guy.
I mean, you expect, you know, if you get something, you expect to give something in return. Did you send Andy Dackel like something nice, like a box?
No, the weird thing is the guy kind of bugged me a little bit. I never even said that. I wanted to run him over. And I didn't even tell him I got his sticks. I didn't say a thing because he bugged me a little bit. So I just
That's awesome. Okay, quick follow-up to Will's question. What is the favorite stick you own? Are you a memorabilia guy? Maybe it's your own stick. I don't know. I mean, or do you have one in your collection that is special to you?
I have a Mario Lemieux. I was fortunate because every time we went to Pittsburgh, I got to eat with Mario. It was like private room. And I caught myself just looking. I'm like, I'm eating dinner with the magnificent one right now. And he was such a cool guy, and we would crack jokes at the face-off, and it made me feel like I was really a part of the league when you got to hang with those types of peeps. Like, I'd always get a quick text from Ronnie saying, you know, playing the Penguins the next day, meet me down at Sullivan Steakhouse, we're going to meet Mario. It was just, it was really cool to be able to chat with him and ask him for a stick or ask him for a stick for another rookie. Like those were pretty cool times. You really felt like a part
for
of the league.
All right. Thanks, Will. One more. We'll wrap up from X, Heart for Niners. So Heart for Niners says, I play beer league and there's always one guy who never washes his equipment. So he's asking who's the player that needs to wash his equipment the most. I mean, in the NHL, that doesn't happen because your gear is looked after by a training staff. So I don't know if you can answer it from an NHL standpoint or, I mean, maybe we connect it to somebody at TSN, if you could envision.
Greg's, it's very simple. There's only one thing that needed to be washed more than other things, and it was Eric Lindros' skates. I sat beside him at the practice rink, and he never wore socks in his skates. And these things, they had a smell to them where I think they had to empty canisters after canisters of Febreze, because it's like, why anybody would not want to wear socks in their skates is one of those things that's beyond me. Like the daily use and the sweating and like the plastic and the leather inside rubbing against your feet. Like it must have caused those things. As soon as he retired, they should have been buried at the dump because they were just awful.
Can you imagine the Hall of Fame calling and saying, Eric, we're putting this big display together. You know, can you send us?
Greg's, the display case would melt. It would melt on scene.
Oh, that is outstanding. All right, buddy, what's the rest of your week look like? I know we have a Leaf game. We're recording this Tuesday. We've got the Devils and the Leafs tonight, regionally on TSN, and then just a waft of overdrive and things like that the rest of the week.
Yeah, it's just going to be watching teams come down the stretch, one game tonight, and then overdrive the rest of the week. Very lucky. I think we have Friday off, so thank you to whatever higher power that arranged that, because I don't know. I'm going to try to massage the situation with my wife. I might get on an early flight on Friday and maybe go tee it up in Carolina somewhere.
Good for you, because we're tipping. We're turning the corner here in Southern Ontario weather-wise, but not quite. Are you, when your golf club opens or when courses around open, like you're not playing at Winchester in my neck of the woods where we played that kid's hockey.
Well, the thing is, you're so excited to get out to the course, Drags, but then for the first month, it's like the greens are pretty fuzzy and it's like it's not ideal conditions. But as Canadians, we're just so fired up to play golf. We're getting out there anyway. But I don't think it's enjoyable for at least another month.
Maybe you saw the video of Duthie playing in the snow last week, right? Like, what is going on there?
That guy, it's not really known to people. That guy is a golf addict, I think. Like, anytime he can get out, he golfs.
Yeah.
He must have led Ontario in rounds played or close to it.
And then you remember last year during the playoffs, as the golf season was nicely getting going, we'd be watching games ready to do our hot zones and our panel hits. And he'd have that massage gun, like, you know, hitting his flexors and all the muscles, because he's a pushing 60-year-old dude who is testing his body too much.
Right. I sat behind him in the green room, and he was watching something on his phone. It was his own swing. No. And he was rewinding and slowing it down. I'm not kidding. This one particular time, he watched his own. I was fascinated watching him. I'm like, you just watched your own swing 150 times. And he's like, yeah, I know. I'm a little bit obsessed. He's crazy, man.
All right. On that note, buddy, always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And really appreciate you pinch hitting the last moment. And guaranteed, when Ray's schedule opens up, we'll get you back during the playoffs and maybe set up the Stanley Cup Final or something fun like that.
Why don't me, you, and Dregs do a playoff preview show, Darren?
You like that? That's a good idea. Okay, we'll pencil you in. All right, hang on for a second, but thanks for joining us, Hope.
Okay,
thanks. And thanks to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs and make the pod possible. Our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.